WBEZ's Nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org. This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work Policy and Practice at the University of Chicago. The master's program in social work, social policy, and social administration prepares professionals to address today's most pressing challenges and offers flexible options with part-time and evening classes to support busy adults balancing complex schedules. Inspire change, shape the future at crownschool.uchicago.edu/social work.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. Slam poetry got its start here in the 80s, a genre that has sparked competitions all over the country. We are home to the largest youth poetry festival in the world, and we have several institutions and community groups dedicated to the craft. To mark National Poetry Month, I recently sat down with a panel of local poets to discuss what makes Chicago's poetry scene unique and impactful. Avery R. Young is the inaugural Chicago Poet Laureate. Angela Jackson is the current Illinois Poet Laureate. And Regina Harris Bayaki is the founder of Haiku Festival. Here's that conversation.
People write about what's outside of their window for the most part.
Yeah.
Either what's outside of their window or what's in the room that they're sitting in. And in Chicago, you see skyscrapers as opposed to seeing mountains.
Yeah.
You see when Jamila writes about LSD, she's talking about the Lakeshore Drive, and that's very unique to a city like Chicago as opposed to if I was in Des Moines, Iowa, and I wouldn't be writing about Lakeshore Drive.
So that is correct. There's a rich poetic history here,
yes.
Avery. What stands out to you?
Oh, my gosh. When you talk about the rich history of Chicago, the first person I think about is Gwendolyn Brooks, you know, who is like the mother.
Absolutely.
The mother of poetry. But you think about the people who also have close ties to Chicago, the Langston Hughes. You have to think about the Poetry Slam created by Mark Smith over at the Green Mill. You think about Nodded in a Bomb, which I had an opportunity to be sitting with the teaching artists along with Anna and Kevin, and we all kind of said, this is what we want to do. And then it blossomed to the largest youth poetry festival in the whole world, right? Those youth that came out of that or come out of that particular poetry festival, they have a unique experience with poetry that I didn't have. I didn't, at 14 or 15, I did not have this huge festival to go to have poetry, you know. And I think
that's incredible.
That makes Nate and Jamila and Eve a very unique pocket of people because they've had this poetry with them since they've been 13, 14.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Which is a big deal.
It's a big deal.
Well, we've touched on Miss Gwendolyn Brooks.
Yes.
So, Miss Jackson, I know that you are following in her footsteps as an Illinois Poet Laureate. You wrote a book about her as well. What do you think is her legacy in Chicago? Gwendolyn Brooks.
Her legacy is a supremely rich legacy. Miss Brooks was known for her excellence in the use of language. She could do anything with language. She made language new. Another feature of her work was her accurate and loving depiction of her community, the entire African-American community. Mm-hmm. I should say Black, because she preferred the term Black because it was all-encompassing, global in its use and meaning. She also was a poet of love.
Yeah.
You could tell that her spirit was a loving and generous one, and she passed that along to the people who would call her their mentor.
I want to hear some more about, some more poetry about Chicago. So I'm going to turn to you, Regina. You've got a haiku that you can share with us?
Oh, sure. I have a haiku. I'm going to read it twice.
Sure.
Revealing the moon on Lake Michigan's shoreline, eyes bury themselves. Revealing the moon on Lake Michigan's shoreline, eyes bury themselves. And that's a haiku that I wrote recently. I am addicted to Twitter. Don't call it X yet, but anyway. And I post poems throughout the day, and I follow the writing community. And Chicago is one of my favorite subjects to write about. I'm so glad that Avery mentioned Langston Hughes, because Gwendolyn Brooks, Langston Hughes, and Richard Wright all wrote for the Chicago Defender. So at one time, all three of those powerhouse people were writing poetry for the Chicago Defender. Richard Wright wrote the preface for Gwendolyn Brooks' first poetry book. So we have all of these, you know, richness, and out of that, growing up to where we are today. So Chicago, you know, a lot of people think of it as a second city, but they don't realize it's the second city because we rebuilt on what the Chicago fire left behind. And what a great legacy we have, you know, not just, I mean, imagine being in a city where, you know, you have someone who an entire apartment complex is named after him.
Yes.
You know, the Big Shoulders poet. And what did he do? Like any great poet, named Gwendolyn Brooks as his successor. So I think it speaks a lot about the poetry community that, you know, we care about each other.
Yeah.
And I know that Angela, you know, has been a great mentor to me as well as Miss Brooks, you know, but going back to Carl Sandburg, you know, saying I want Gwendolyn Brooks to succeed me, that's DEI long before DEI was coined.
Yeah,
a term.
That's a good point.
So I think that speaks volumes about Chicago and how close-knit we are as a community. And I'm so proud of my kids. I hope, you know, and I call them my kids, but, you know, this year we got poems from over 1,300 kids.
Oh, wow.
In the past 20 years, we've read 37,000 poems were sent by kids.
Well, you know what? Here's a good time to listen to some haikus by Chicago youth.
Perfect.
My name is Adonis Abraham, and this is my haiku. Winter's breath whispers, frost-kissed morning hurts the earth, silent cold prevails.
My name is Mendel Shamsi, and I am 13 years old. This is my haiku. Lonely moon-drunk thing, trapped in the grasp of the light, howl your bitter cry.
Hi, my name is Aoki Robinson, and I did a haiku on butterflies. Butterflies, ballet, fluttering wings, paint the sky, nature's graceful dance.
Oh. Talk more about the importance of creating spaces for youth to participate in poetry.
You know, we all have the same roots. When I was 7 years old, my mom took me to the Museum of Science and Industry, and Gwendolyn Brooks, who was the poet laureate of Illinois, had a poetry festival. And I was one of the kids who went to read. And when I finished reading, she opened her pocketbook and gave us money. So, you know, hey, I'm turned on. I mean, I was already turned on to poetry, but someone's going to open their pocketbook and hand me cash. And long story short, when I got home, my mom said, sit down and write Miss Brooks a thank you note. And I said, of course. I wrote her a thank you note, and I'm 7 years old, and I sent her, this is a poem that I read in case you forgot who I was. She did a dangerous thing. She wrote me back. We became pen pals. And even though she lived on 78th and Evans, and I lived on 41st and Wabash, we wrote each other religiously.
Oh, what a story.
She gave me such great feedback. And so in December 2000, when she passed, I was talking to Hakeem Adebuti, her cultural son, and Nora Brooks Blakely, her biological daughter. And I said, is anyone going to, you know, take up where she left off with the youth? And, you know, everyone's busy. And long story short, Haiku Festival was born.
Yeah.
And so I, you know, I mean, just even to compare myself with her. It's not a comparison. She just inspired me to do it. That's how Haiku Festival was born.
You know, I think, Avery, for a lot of us, we're introduced to poetry in school, right?
Yes.
I remember fourth grade having to be part of my classmates writing a poetry anthology.
Yes.
This was in Toronto. Our English teacher, you know, made us memorize things like Robert Frost or Edgar Allan Poe. What was the role of poetry in your childhood, Avery? I want to hear from you and from Miss Jackson on this one.
Oh, it was... it was a great role, a leading role. I grew up in Chicago, West Side Chicago, but I also grew up Baptist. And poetry is all the way is Sunday service all day long, from the hymns to the sermon to the, whatever the choir is singing. And I was always too in the oratory contest. Mm-hmm. And I remember trying to read, but he was cool. The teacher was like, "You can't read that because of some of the language." And then it went to then Claude McKay's If We Must Die. And teacher almost, by the time I finished performing that poem, teacher, we should have went with where he was cool.
They weren't ready for that.
I mean, people are afraid after he read If We Must, after I recited If We Must Die. But pivotal point in my life, yeah. 8 years old, third grade, my first poem is in response to a teacher saying something that I thought was just really crazy to say to an eight-year-old child. And I thought I was reading the teacher for filth because that was my point. I was going to, over the weekend, I was going to write this poem and I was going to read it to her on Monday, let her know what I was feeling. And she
cursing
was like,
her out with a poem.
She was like, "Amy, that's beautiful." I'm like, "What?" "It's beautiful. I ain't want to be beautiful. I want you to cry." But what I learned in that moment was, because, you know, I've always had like this mouth. The mouth mouth kind of crazy. But that mouth in the context of a poem, people would listen. Mm. And not only did people listen, they admired and they loved it. And I was like, okay. And then it wasn't just about mouthing off.
Yeah.
It was really about me having an avenue to kind of describe the world that I'm living in. So the role of poetry and then what it means to me, and then also like now, as an inaugural poet laureate
it
of a city.
It stayed with you. It's incredible.
It's a great role.
So, Ms. Jackson, same question. And your advice then, right? You've got the ears of young people. What's your advice to young poets?
My advice to young poets is listen and read. Try to read as much poetry as you can. But even more than that, listen, because there is poetry in everyday language. And you just happen to be open to it. My father spoke in metaphors. There was poetry in the blues. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
There was poetry in the gospel songs.
Yeah.
So if you can't get a hold to poetry books, just listen to what's around you and you will hear poetry and it will fine-tune you to the world of poetry.
Regina, poetry's been evolving, right, throughout your career, throughout your lifetime. What excites you about this current moment?
Just knowing that so many kids are writing. And, you know, I'm not necessarily a huge hip-hop fan, but one thing I love about hip-hop is that it started every young person to walk around with a spiral notebook and a pen and a pencil. You know, and a lot of people, I write on my phone sometimes, but people still carry that pen and paper.
Mm-hmm.
Still, young kids still carry it. This is an anthology that we're publishing this year, 20th anniversary Haiku anthology. And this is proof positive that kids are writing, that they're thinking. There's a poem in here from a student from Ghana, because when we experienced the global shutdown, a lot of kids from all over the world sent in poetry.
Right.
And just the idea that someone is living through a war-torn city. And here's a poem from Samira Hussein. She is a 14-year-old in Accra, Ghana. The bombed old city. In a creative art class, one child repaints it. 14 years old. I mean,
wow.
My goodness, 14 years old. Mm. And to be in Accra and say, "I want to send this poem to Chicago." That, I mean, just being able to reach out to someone thousands of miles away, that's the beauty of poetry. I mean, music has the same feeling, art has the same, but poetry is something that's coming from these young children. They don't necessarily need to have any special training, yeah, just to be able to write down their feelings.
Everyone at this table smiled when you read that poem. Last words to you, Avery. Just leave us with advice for those behind you.
Fall in love with poetry, because poetry can be your best friend. It definitely is. It definitely will be why people will stop and listen to you.
We'll leave it there. We've been talking with Avery R. Young, Angela Jackson, and Regina Harris Bayaki. Thank you all so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank
Sasha.
You, Sasha.
Thank you. This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Max Lubers, edited by Meha Ahmed, and mixed by Brenda Ruiz. April is National Poetry Month, and we want to hear from you about your favorite poem or poet. How did you find them, and why do you like that poem? You can leave us a voicemail at 888-915-9945. That's our question of the week here on Reset. We'll be sharing your answers on the air, in our daily newsletter, and on this podcast. Thank you for listening. Be sure to check back in with us tomorrow morning for a fresh episode.
I love how WBEZ shows different sides of the story. I never feel like it's too polarized, and I think the reporters do an excellent job of trying to get the full story, trying to show different other sides. I'm often, when I'm listening to public radio, think in my mind, well, what about X? Or like, I have another question. Or like, have they thought about X? And most of the time, WBEZ thinks about all of it, which I really appreciate.